Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It is a pleasure to join you. Hope that you had a weekend, and we are finally here. It's been, coming together for a few weeks now, but we now are ready for an action-packed week when it comes to the NBA. We've seen plenty of news nuggets come out over the weekend, some rumors, even some deals that, are known to happen now. But a lot of exciting stuff on many different levels are potentially going to happen. But one thing that we do have to look forward to is the NBA draft. And, of course, that, for me here at Locked On Grizzlies, means I have the chance to once again speak with one of the best draft minds out there who does have connections to the Memphis market, and that is Mr. Chip Williams. Chip, how are you, sir?
Hey, man, I'm doing really well, really well. Excited to be back on. Really appreciate you having me again.
Yep, of course, if you've listened to the show for the past several months, we've had Chip on a couple of times. Him and Sudu Abadea, they had do some good work on the draft. I know that Chip, kind of like our my former co-host Mark King, Chip has also had many things go, well in his personal life, and he's got some things going on. So not as much opportunity when it comes to the draft, as there has been in past years, but such a great mind when it comes to the NBA draft, and we always love to get his perspective. So, Chip, we'll start right off with it. So the last time we talked, you mentioned several different names out there. We talked about this draft in general, trying to make something out of it in a draft that, overall is not viewed as, as favorably as in the past. But now, three or four months since we last talked, have your thoughts changed? Do you feel that, your overall opinion of this draft has improved or maybe declined a little bit?
It's such a weird year because usually at this time, you have already seen some of these guys in summer league, you've seen them in maybe even the preseason, you've heard reports of what's happening in camp, but here we are in mid to late November, and we still haven't had a draft yet. And so this has to be certainly, as long as I can remember, the furthest the draft has been pushed back. And so I wondered what that was going to bring about. Were guys going to get, overanalyzed? Were guys going to, jump up boards late because of some NBA combine numbers that nobody saw? It was so weird that the combine, nobody even really got to see that. You just had to see the occasional number reported. And so it's been an elongated, drawn-out process, and for me personally, I think it's what we talked about last time on the pod was this is not a draft filled with a bunch of star power at the top. There are some bigger names, but not necessarily guys that you expect to come in and be, franchise cornerstones, but I do think that there are going to be guys who are going to be high-level NBA players littered throughout this draft. And so I think if teams, you'll see it like you see it every year. The smart teams will find the guys who can contribute in some way. I don't know that we're going to have, three, four, five all-star level guys come out of here. But I am kind of excited about that next tier, those guys who can be starters on high-level playoff teams. And I think there's quite a few of those in this draft.
And that's the thing about it also that's kind of jumped out to me, Chip, especially over the past, month or so. We've kind of seen what could Minnesota or what could Golden State or others do with these top picks. But in my opinion, it seems like their leverage may be limited a little bit. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason I say that is when you look at the guys who basically have been thought, for a while to be the top three, Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, and James Wiseman, in that next play, in that, really 4 to 10 range, you got guys who, in my opinion and others, may even be better than those three. With LaMelo and Anthony Edwards, you've got, Tyrese Halliburton, you've got Killian Hayes, others. With James Wiseman, you've got Onyeka Okongwu. So it seems like that in general, it looks like that top three has kind of come down a bit to the next 4 to 6, in my opinion. And while they may stick out as having higher ceilings, you really have a group of really 6 to 8 guys who you could see anywhere from that 3 to 8 range going in a certain order. It seems like that the tiers are a little bit closer than they once were.
Yeah, I think that's true. Think about it from the Golden State Warriors perspective, right? Like, they don't necessarily need anybody in this draft that, or I guess I should put it this way, that no one that they're drafting is probably going to make a huge difference in the next 2 to 3 years and them winning another title. So if they had this number two pick in last year's draft, I mean, they're basically saying, okay, what can we get for Ja Morant? They're holding the Ja Morant lottery ticket, right? And I think someone, I don't know, you know, look at maybe a Washington. Does Washington, they feel more comfortable shipping Bradley Beal to the Golden State Warriors if they know they're getting Ja Morant in return? But the beauty is kind of in the eye of the beholder in this draft, because you said it perfectly. I mean, there's just, I mean, as many as 7, 8, 9 guys who are in play for those top three picks. And, you know, I know everyone talks about, you know, Wiseman and LaMelo and Anthony Edwards, but I mean, if a Tyrese Halliburton went that high, it wouldn't surprise me. If someone fell in love with Obi Toppin, it wouldn't surprise me. Onyeka Okongwu wouldn't surprise me. I actually think Onyeka Okongwu would be a heck of a pick for the Warriors too. And it the same goes a little
Absolutely
bit
agree.
For, yeah,
Absolutely
the same
agree.
Goes a little bit for the Timberwolves, right? Like they, the guy that they pick at one, assuming they hang on to that pick, it doesn't totally match up with Towns and Russell. He's going to be a little bit younger. Now, if as long as they're willing to be patient, you know, you could kind of grow that core together. But how patient are Towns and Russell going to be? I mean, I'm sure that, you know, Towns has been there several years now. He's probably pretty tired of losing. I'm sure that they have some sense of urgency to put a veteran piece around those two and try to make a playoff push. So it's weird. It's, you know, the number one pick is usually about as good of an asset that there is in the NBA, and not saying, and it's still, it's a great asset for the Timberwolves to have, right? They have their pick of any of these guys we've talked about. But it's just, I don't know. It's a strange year to be holding that pick, but also shopping it. And so I think it makes for a really interesting show on Wednesday night, because that, you know, that's what's fun about the NBA, right? And the NBA draft is, it's a show. So there's going to be trades. Obviously, guys are going to be selected. It's fun. I mean, it's some of the most fun times of the year, in my opinion.
I agree with you as well. And we'll also talk about two specific names who we discussed, you know, and I know that you brought him up at the time that we talked last time. I had not really myself dived into the draft, but now looking at several of these prospects, haven't looked at the lottery so much because the Grizzlies aren't in it, but I do sure. feel from what I've seen, when it comes to Okongwu and when it comes to Wiseman, I know we're a Memphis-based podcast and know that Memphis, you know, fans, they do love Wiseman, but I don't think Okongwu has as high of a ceiling as Wiseman. But I do think that I think Okongwu's game is going to translate to creating more significance quicker than Wiseman would. And if his defense develops like many think that he does, I think that he's more likely to be trusted in high leverage and playoff situations than Wiseman can be. So I don't think that Okongwu is as high of a ceiling prospect as Wiseman, but I do think he could be a safer bet. And so when you look at these two players, you know, I think there's a legitimate chance Okongwu could be drafted before Wiseman. I don't think that it's going to happen. But what I'm getting at is that, you know, when you look at Wiseman and you look at Okongwu, you know, it seems like that, you know, Wiseman is not the unicorn type level center from this draft that many thought he once was even a few months ago.
No. And, you know, obviously, James Wiseman is a super talented guy and has come in with a lot of fanfare. You know, he's been the number one guy in his class on basically every recruiting ranking site. And then, you know, the couple games he played in Memphis, he looked really good. But, you know, there's some underlying stuff that I think will make you question exactly what James Wiseman's ceiling is and what he will eventually be in the NBA. I certainly think he'll be a high level rotation guy in the league, but you know, it would surprise me a little bit if he was a multi-time all-star or anything like that. I just think, you know, he moves pretty well for a guy his size, but I like Onyeka Okongwu's movement a little better. He's got good bounce for a guy his size, but I like Okongwu's, you know, coordination and bounce there a little bit better. And then he just, he tends to make some questionable decisions from time to time on, you know, when he's got the ball in his hand. He's a guy that likes to shoot a jumper despite his overwhelming size that he has, especially I mean, even in the AAU and in college, in the AAU circuit, he just had some questionable decision making. And for all of his gifts and all of his talents, I just think that that is what has scared scouts a little bit is, what is he ultimately going to become in the NBA when he's now having to play against other guys of his athleticism and his size? What are we getting? What are we getting, right? And so for me personally, I lean towards Okongwu. I would have him rated a little bit higher than Wiseman. I think that he's going to have a quicker impact from day one. But I also think that over the course of their development, I would just rather have a foundation like Okongwu to build off of. And that look, that's not a knock on Wiseman. That's much more of a hat tip to what Okongwu brings to the table and just his versatility. And one thing I like to look at, Sean, is how, okay, this is something that Sudo and I talk about on our podcast all the time. If all else fails, right? If this guy, his potential, we say he may be able to do this, could he develop that? If none of that comes to fruition, if none of that materializes, what kind of player is this guy going to be? I look at Okongwu, let's just say he is what he is. I think what he is a really nice high-level rotation player who could play playoff minutes because he looks like a guy who can already switch 1 through 5 and has a good rim protector and a good rim runner. And I just, that to me feels much safer, and I know what I'm going to get versus what James Wiseman could be maybe, right? If that makes sense. So, look, Wiseman's a great player. He's going to be a very high pick. It's just if we have to split the hairs here, I think I would lean on Onyeka Okongwu.
And I agree with you. And I think with Wiseman, one thing that it could come down to, not really a dilemma, but just, something that I think is relevant, is that if you focus on what he's good at, he can be elite. But that type of profile is limited. I saw a few places where they were talking about a better Hassan Whiteside. I don't necessarily know if he becomes that level of a shot blocker or a rebounder, but you see that that has limited, upside when it comes to those high leverage or playoff situations. But Wiseman probably wants to become the best version of himself that he can be, and that may be it over him not really furthering developing that part of his game, but trying to create other more valuable parts of his game, like shooting from the rim and being able to switch on the perimeter and all that. That may never, click though. And so it's kind of an interesting
Sure.
dilemma with Wiseman. There's a lot to work with there. But there also is, a bit of risk there, that really, makes you want to hope that he lands with the right team that'll make the right decision for him.
And part of it too is just the devaluing of the traditional center over the years. I mean, think about it. When is the last time a team won an NBA title where a big man was the best player on the team? I mean, I guess you could almost point at this year's Lakers team, but okay, if you have an Anthony Davis type big, yeah, of course, take that guy number one, right? But there is no Anthony Davis type big in this draft. It's just, Wiseman, if he had come out 20 years ago, he probably would be a shoe-in for the number one pick, right? You just found the best 7-footer and you picked him in the top 2 or 3 every single year. But with the emphasis on creation, shot making, the 3-pointer, being able to switch on defense, it just kind of narrows down exactly what you're looking for in a big man. And like, that's why a few years back I was so high on Jaren Jackson Jr. because I'm like, okay, here is a guy who is long, athletic, block shots, gets up and down the floor, shoots threes, should be able to switch. And that is exactly what you're looking for in a modern day center. And I just, for me, that's not James Wiseman. And so that now, can he become that? What is it? Can he get there? We'll see. But he certainly does not project that. If we're just talking about probably a realistic projection of what his game is going to evolve into. And that's what makes this tough, right, Sean? We get to look at these guys as teenagers and say, all right, what's it going to look like in 6, 7, 8, 10 years? And that's, you miss all the time in the draft, but you start to find patterns based on your previous draft work and you carry that over further. And so I think that's why Wiseman who maybe came into this season as the consensus number one pick, is almost certainly not going to go number one, and there's certainly a chance he could even slip down a few spots with some of these guys being picked ahead of him.
My favorite stats over the past few years that, you know, I looked at in the NBA playoffs was last year, Chip. When you looked at the final eight teams, the four centers, Gasol, Embiid, Brooke Lopez, and Jokic, were the four centers who had made the most threes since Gasol made that a part of his game in the 16-17 season. Those four centers were the were a part of the last eight teams in the NBA. Your center now basically has to either be one of your better playmakers on the team with the ability to shoot from the outside, or basically a 3-and-D player who could play very good
right.
defense as well as shoot the three. And do you think Wiseman becomes that? I don't. I don't see him ever having that type of ability on the outside shooting or the ability to extend from the rim effectively. I don't think Okongwu turns into that type of shooter, but I do think he has better playmaking skills, and I do think that he has the ability to defend on the perimeter a bit more. And that's why I think when it really comes down to those two, I think that's why it may make sense to look at Okongwu, you know, as being the safer bet, you know, in today's era.
Right. Well, Kent, like, if I look at Okongwu, a guy that he reminds me a little bit of is Clint Capella, and the way Clint Capella is able to do what he does and be so effective and still be a positive every time he's out there on the floor is he beats his guy down the floor. He gets easy dump ins. He blocks shots. He's able to switch out onto the perimeter. And you have to be able to contribute on the offensive end if you're not going to shoot threes, right? So whether that's being able to get a quick seal and an easy bucket, or crashing the offensive glass, creating extra possessions for your team. And I just I see that much more comfortably with Onyeka Okongwu than I do Wiseman. And again, you know, I just want to make it clear we're talking about we're splitting who's the best big in the draft, right? And so that's the conversation that James Wiseman is in. I hate being overly negative about a guy because that's not what I'm here to do. But it, again, you know, we're splitting hairs, and I look at what Okongwu his most likely outcome is, and I would much rather bet on that than James Wiseman, especially if we're talking about a team that's looking to contend pretty early.
And I agree with you, and I echo what you say as well. I think James Wiseman is in any draft. I think, you know, last year, even in, you know, the 2018 draft, I think that he is a legitimate top 10 pick. I just do have a bit of concerns. I think his downside is a little bit more of a – there's a bit of a higher chance of a downside that you don't want to see happen with Wiseman. But at the end of the day, he's a wonderful prospect. But just in today's NBA, when you look at it, I think there's just things that you see translate more with Okongwu. But it's going to be exciting to see. I know that a lot of Memphis fans really – and that's the beauty about this. It adds intrigue to seeing how their careers go because, you know, hey, we could be wrong. I'm more wrong than I am right when it comes to evaluating these prospects. I'll admit that in a heartbeat. And so it's something to add intrigue to watch these careers as they grow. Chip, another player who we've talked about his defensive potential and, you know, trying to figure out where his offense is going to go. And that's Precious Achiuwa, you know, from Memphis. Now, you know, back when we last talked, a lot of mock drafts, you know, they were having him even, you know, towards maybe 9 or 10, you know, in the lottery. But now looking at things, you're getting a lot of helium for certain players, you know, Patrick Williams and, you know, Kira Lewis and, you know, and Naismith and Sadiq Bey and all these guys. It looks like that it's starting to be a little bit more crowded and it may be pushing Achiuwa a bit down those draft boards. Not necessarily because he you know, something's come up about him, but just because it seems like that his offensive upside may be a little bit of a question. You know, at that point, you know, really in the lottery, can you pick a guy who's probably going to be low usage on offense? Or do you think it's something like that that may push him back into the late teens or early 20s?
Yeah, I think that it's you're spot on. It's the offensive question marks that are going to push Precious down, possibly outside of the lottery and maybe even into the 20s. I do think he has a pretty clear role. I mean, he's a long – athletic guy who can really, really defend. And that's going to have to be his calling card in the NBA. He's going to have to be able to defend guys bigger and smaller than him. And he's going to just have to figure out where he can contribute on the offensive end if the shot is not reliable. And so whether he's going to have to become a good slasher, he's going to have to become a good finisher around the rim. And the shot is just going to have to develop as time goes on. So, you know, you look at the free throw percentage with him, and that's always concerning. That's a pretty good tell of what kind of touch a guy has on his shots. And he obviously was not a good foul shooter at Memphis. Same concern, to be honest with you, with Wiseman. He had a very, very low true shooting percentage for a guy of his size on the AAU circuit. So, yeah, I mean, I think that Precious's athleticism, his defensive ability, is what's going to get him drafted as high as he's going to go. Because you look at a guy with the question marks offensively at the next level, those guys typically don't go, you know, in the mid-first round. But what Precious brings to the table and what he possibly could become on offense, I think is why he's going to end up as a top 25 or possibly even top 20 pick.
And I agree with you. And that's also, I think, you know, just to be honest, I think that if Precious were to be knocked down a little bit in this draft and wind up being someone who gets into more of that contender area on a good development, you know, in a good development organization, I think that that actually could do him some benefit. I think Precious is one of those prospects who you could see have a better chance of reaching his ceiling if he actually got drafted lower with a contender. Would you say that he's that type of guy?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think that Precious is – whoever drafts him is realizing that this is a project, right? Like, this is not a guy that you can necessarily count on to provide big minutes early on. But, you know, I think that a lot of GMs, front offices, they look at a guy like this and they think, all right, if I'm going to miss, I'm going to miss on a guy who checks every box. We just need to basically refine the skill set, and we need to figure out how he's going to best fit into an offense, because we love the defensive ability. We love honestly, for a guy that's 6'9", he's about as good of a rim protector as you're going to find at that size. And he truly can, you know, it's something that guys say before the draft all the time. Oh, he can switch. He can guard 1 through 5. And Precious actually can do that. He can actually switch out onto wings and guards and guard them well. He obviously is going to struggle early with some big guys. You know, if he was switched on Joel Embiid would probably be licking his chops. But he's going to figure it out. I have no doubt about him on that end of the court. It's just, you know, where can he find a spot on the offensive end? And I think it'd be great if he could get to a team that is looking, you know, probably a young, up-tempo, fast-paced team, because we saw at Memphis last year, if you get the ball to him in transition, he's a pretty good finisher. So, you know, he's a project. It's going to take some time, but there's a lot to like about Precious.
And I think that that's the thing in general is that, you know, especially once you get past the lottery, there's several prospects that are certainly there to like. So we've talked about the guys who have connections to Memphis, you know, in terms of their college basketball. But what about, you know, the NBA team, the reason why we're here? Coming up, we're going to focus on that. Me and Chip are going to dive deep into the Grizzlies' 40th selection. You know, could they move up? Do they get another pick in the second round? What prospects make sense for them? I'll be right back with Chip Williams to discuss the Grizzlies' plans for the draft. The NBA draft is finally here, and we have you covered here at the Locked On Podcast Network. We will have live draft coverage this year on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch at Locked On Live. It will be the only place you can find Chad Ford, the GOAT of draft analysis, on the night of the draft. Join Brad Roland of Locked On Hawks and David Locke for the most in-depth coverage of the NBA draft, featuring analysis from Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated. Follow Locked On Live on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, and get alerts as soon as they go live. We all want to add healthy benefits to our day, and a lot of the time it starts with small but significant changes to your daily routine that you can commit to. Well, one thing that I can certainly suggest as a way to do that is Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And the great thing about it is that you can have it at any time during the day. You can have it for breakfast. You can have it, you know, before or after a workout, maybe in the afternoon when you're listening to your favorite Locked On Podcast Network show. It also has a wide assortment of flavors. So no matter what your taste preferences may be, you're likely to find a favorite flavor at BuiltBar.com that you'll enjoy. But if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and you put in the code Locked On, you'll get 20% off your next order. That's 20% off your next order from Built Bar. But I can tell you this with confidence. Once you add Built Bar to your day, it's likely going to remain a part of your team routine for good. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, put in the promo code Locked On, and get 20% off your next order from Built Bar. Do want to remind all of you that it is a very exciting week. We are absolutely ready for a bunch of news around the NBA pertaining to the Grizzlies. Hopefully there's an unexpected move out there that certainly will add significance to the Grizzlies in the present and the future. But, you know, getting back to the one move that we do know the Grizzlies have in their arsenal this week, and that is the number 40 pick in this draft. But Chip, I don't want to sit here and start negative on this, but I do think that it does need to be talked about a little bit. You know, we're talking about this 40th pick. I've done a bunch of prospect profiles on this podcast, but at the end of the day, the reason why we're talking about it so much is it's our only pick. But I think it needs to be understood, this is the 40th pick in a draft that's not looked on favorably. A lot of times when you get around that 40 range, yes, you certainly could find a diamond in the rough like we did with, like D'Anthony Melton, for instance, or Dylan Brooks. But more often than not, these picks in this area, typically, they wind up not working out more than they do. And so I think that that's kind of what you need to keep in the back of your mind. There's even the chance that the Grizzlies may, sell this pick or use it in a trade and not have a draft pick at all. Do you not agree that that is a bigger reality than most might like to admit?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, at pick 40, if you get a guy who ends up as a rotation player, I mean, that's a huge win. I was just looking back at some of the previous picks at number 40, just doesn't look like there's a whole lot of guys who are going to, get the fan base really excited. So, I will say that we have very little track record of Zach Kleiman drafting players, but the track record we have is excellent. So if I think that anybody in the league is going to get value out of a pick like this, whether that be in a trade, moving up, trading down, selecting a player, whatever that looks like, I just think that Kleiman and this front office has bought a lot of goodwill with the moves that they've made. And I don't see how, if you're a Grizzlies fan, you don't just kind of sit back and say, hey, you know what? The 40th pick usually doesn't turn out to be much, but I'm going to trust this guy. I'm going to see what he brings in, and we'll just go from there.
So let's talk about then, the Grizzlies do make this selection, because at the end of the day, there still are, several, potential names, and we'll get into those names a little bit later on in this segment, in the third segment. But I do want to talk about a little bit the Grizzlies roster right now. I think I mentioned it, in the past. I probably asked you and Sudu, back when we last talked. But when it comes to this number 40 pick, is it just absolutely BPA, meaning best player available? Or do things come into play? Like, for instance, the Grizzlies know that at least for the next few years, unless they find a deal for Jonas Valanciunas, they're good at center. And this draft, in my opinion, has more attractive, upside in guards and wings in this area of the draft than it does, bigs. There may be a big that you just absolutely love, but do you think things such as that do kind of play into the decision? Is it best player available? Is it the guy who offers the most shooting upside since we need that? What kind of makes the most sense as far as the mindset goes with this pick?
I just think that this is my philosophy in general with the NBA draft, and that is you just take the best player that's available. If you have conviction about a player, you just draft them and you just figure it out later. And my number one reason for thinking that is, okay, so you're going to make a move in the draft, and you're going to basically not select someone because of someone who is currently on your roster. Well, just take the Memphis Grizzlies, for example. You took a snapshot of their roster 2 years ago and compared it to what it is today. It is completely fundamentally different, right? You just should not plan around a guy drafting a player going to unseat someone or having trouble finding minutes because of someone who is currently on your roster. That roster just turns over so much. By the time this rookie is ready to contribute, who knows what the roster is going to look like? And you would hate to pass up on a guy you feel good about because of the way that your roster is currently constructed. So that's just my philosophy in general with the draft. Whether you have pick one or pick 60, I think if you like someone, you take them, and then you figure it out or let it organically work itself out.
I agree with you completely. And I think the reason why that is because if you take the guy that you feel has true talent, if you're taking the guy that you feel is the best talent that's there, then that means that you are going to do all that you can to make that player work out. And obviously, if it does, well, then that just gives you another option to then make further decisions. Whereas picking for a need, you're kind of limiting yourself a bit. I think taking the best player available is the best way to keep all options open for certainly. So, four names. And if you want to add to this, take away from this, that's fine. But four names really stand out to me at that number 40 pick: Killian Tilly, Isaiah Joe, Jamias Ramsey, and Elijah Hughes. Now, there is a very good possibility none of those are up there at 40, but do you think that that's the type of names that would be true values at 40 that make sense and would be a Grizzlies type pick? You could take away or add to those names, but just some names that through my prospect profiles have really stood out to me that I like.
No, I think the Grizzlies would come out pretty well with any of those guys. I'm actually a huge, huge fan of the first guy you threw out, Killian Tilly. I think the Killian Tilly is probably a lottery pick if it weren't for some injuries that he's suffered. I mean, he has been very much on the draft radar for multiple years now. And he just kept struggling with injuries, having to go back to Gonzaga, play another year. It just he's had a frustrating path to the NBA, but man, what a talented guy, and really fun to watch. Smart basketball player, makes a lot of good plays. Another guy, you said Isaiah Joe, right?
Yes, I really like his versatility as a three-point shooter.
Yep, Isaiah Joe, and then his teammate Mason Jones are two guys that I am a fan of. I think that when you're picking here, you kind of have a few guys who are going to be in your range, right? A few types of prospects. You have, first, you have the international stash guy, right? A guy who may not come over for a season or two. Although I think we're seeing that less and less with the development of the G League. But that still is on the table, right? You have the guys who don't come over. You have the older prospect who's maybe 22, 23, maybe even 24 years old, had a longer college career and is not viewed as highly as some of his younger draft peers. And then you have the guys who maybe do one thing really well, maybe were good college players for a season or two, but they have some pretty serious question marks going into the NBA, right? And so, like, Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones are two guys that play, obviously college teammates, but kind of do a lot of things well, and that includes shooting, which I know is always going to be really exciting for Memphis Grizzlies fans. And so I'm a huge fan of both of those guys. One name that I would also add to your list there that I have my eye on that I think is going to end up being a pretty underrated guy and a good chance that he is there at 40 for the Grizzlies is actually a guy that Memphis fans are going to be very familiar with, and that's Nate Hinton from Houston. I really like his play. I like the way he's a pretty good defender. You check out all the numbers, everything checks out there. He's a pretty high usage guy, good shooter, decent foul shooter. Shot almost 39% from three this past season. 6'5", 210. He's a big guy, can easily play next to Ja. And I like that You watch him play at Houston, and you think, all right, this is a guy who can make a difference at the next level, who can be a rotation type wing at the next level. So you look at where the Grizzlies are and some of the options that they're going to have. I think they could get a player that ends up being, Dylan Brooks-ish. That's Brooks is kind of the perfect example of a second round pick, right? Older guy, stayed in college for a long time, not exactly, a high level prospect in terms of, he had some plenty of question marks, including what position was he going to play when he got to the NBA, but has found a way to make a big impact at the next level. And so with guys like Nate Hinton or Isaiah Joe or Mason Jones, Killian Tilly, I think these are guys that can do that. And so, look, man, the Grizzlies could have one pick and it would be pick 60, and I would be really excited about it and trying to figure out how they're going to get an impact player. So I would throw one more name that I would be surprised if he's there. But if he is, I would just go ahead and auto draft him, and that's Xavier Tillman from Michigan State. There's some divided opinions on him, but I just man, I get pretty excited thinking about the prospect of a Jaren Jackson Jr., Xavier Tillman, or Brandon Clark, Xavier Tillman front court. So that's a couple extra names to add to the nice list you put together.
And before we go to our next break, I will bring up Xavier Tillman, and here's the reason why. I did a, I know that you used to write for Grizzly Bear Blues, and so I did an article where I talked about how what the Grizzlies seem to prefer with some talents that they've added in recent years, especially during the Kliman era, Melton and Clark and Concher, for instance, these highly productive guys who add value, elsewhere besides scoring. Tillman, as both a rebounder and a passer, stood out. And so I agree with you. I think Tillman would be worthwhile as a pick at 40. But a name that I also think does have a bit of relevance in this draft, Chip, not necessarily because he's, it's a good chance he's not in the plans. But when you look at Jontay Porter, who the Grizzlies currently have, on their roster, they have a team option for him, could decline it, sign him to multiple years, whatever they decide to do. But when you look at his across-the-board production back in the 17-18 college season and match it up with Brandon Clark, it really stands out. It also really stands out with Tillman as well. And I don't necessarily think Porter prevents you from drafting Tillman, but from what you have looked at with Porter, I think that's kind of something to keep in the back of the mind, that the Grizzlies already basically have a draft pick for next year in Jontay Porter, and he really fits what this front office is looking for in their big men.
Oh, I like the way you think there, Sean. That is, I sometimes have to remind myself that Jontay Porter is a member of the Grizzlies, and that's he's got a little bit of the Killian Tilly thing where if you just remove the injuries, I mean that's a lottery talent. I actually just went back and looked. I had him ranked 12th before the 2020 draft. So 20, excuse me, 2019 draft. Yeah, man, I'm very excited and I'm bullish on what Jontay Porter could be as an NBA player. But again, it kind of goes back to the conversation we had a minute ago. Having Jontay Porter on the roster would not prevent me from drafting Xavier Tillman. If I thought he was the best guy on the board at the time, I would take him. I expect, this is just a guess, but I expect that the Grizzlies will do their best to draft a wing, most likely a wing that shoots. Because those are, if you can hit on one of those guys in the second round, you've struck gold. But it wouldn't surprise me if one of these high level big prospects or even a high level point guard prospect slipped down. I don't think Kleiman would be afraid to select any position.
And I think that that's the best way to do it. Kleiman has shown that he has the capability of keeping all options on the table, but also being very, very calculating with what he does. And I think that's what's made his tenure with the Grizzlies so successful. Coming up, though, what if the Grizzlies don't stay at 40? It's not a guarantee. And as a matter of fact, with some rumors about the draft, with teams potentially ready to maneuver out of the first or second round, could the Grizzlies move up? May they even be able to add another pick? I'm going to talk with Chip a little bit about that when we return. So Chip, in writing that piece where I talked about Xavier Tillman and how he had some comparable, you know, stats with Brandon Clark, you know, another name that stood out to me was the name Desmond Bain. And you talk about Desmond Bain as being a guy who was a late first, early second potential pick, but you want to talk about someone who's really seen his draft stock go up, and that's Bain, to the point that, you know, it's going to be hard to see him get past that, you know, a stretch where you've got, you know, the Mavs and the Sixers and the Heat, these, you know, contending or, you know, future contenders who really could use guard depth. He probably is not going to make it till 25. But I bring that name up because other names, you know, Josh Green, for instance, you know, others that you could see being late first. Do you feel it makes sense for Memphis to perhaps couple this pick with another second? Do you feel like it makes sense? Is there anyone that you would be willing to trade up in the first round to really target if you were Memphis?
Yeah, it's a good question. I actually, Desmond Bane is a great name. You talked about a guy who you're looking for some size and some shooting. He fits that mold, you know, perfectly. I don't think it is off the table that the Grizzlies do try something like that. You know, I think that there are a few guys, you know, there's some divided opinions on Aaron Naismith, but a guy that kind of profiles as another shooter at the next level. Shattuck Bey is another one who's probably going to be in that range. Let's see, I'm trying to think of maybe one more guy. You know, there's been the last couple of days, and this is why I love this time, because you just don't know what report's real, what's floating around, what's happening. A guy that I think will end up being a really nice NBA player that could end up around that range, striking range for the Grizzlies to go up and get, is Devon Dodson from Kansas. I think that he would easily be a top 20 prospect for me and possibly even top 10, but he's being mocked in that late first, early to mid second round range. And that's a guy I am a huge, huge fan of. And you talk about a guy who probably would not immediately replace the production if Tyus Jones ended up getting moved for whatever reason immediately. But I think that he could end up being Tyus Jones-ish as his career develops. So, Sean, I'm sure you've seen some of the stuff of, you know, hey, the Grizzlies are looking at Campazzo, a guy I actually saw at the Olympics in 2016. He was a really good player for Argentina, possibly bringing him over. So what does that mean for Tyus Jones? So, you know, all options are on the table, right? You just don't know. The Grizzlies have extra draft picks. They have tons of young players. They have a lot of attractive assets to other teams. So, and we know Zach Kleiman, that guy is he likes to make a move. He's not afraid to shake some things up and send guys out, send picks out, whatever. I mean, look at what he ended up after the Mike Conley deal, flipping all that into. I mean, we could do a whole podcast and probably still miss a piece or two that he was able to get as part of the Conley deal. So, yeah, I think it's all on the table. I think that he's not going to be afraid to go get a guy if he wants a guy.
Your ears must have been burning, Chip, because in the same segment of, you know, yesterday's episode, I mentioned I would be talking to you to start off the week. I actually did a few segments on that, talking about that in this market really does make sense for the Grizzlies to kind of, you know, check the markets for a Tyus Jones or Jonas Valanciunas with their good value contracts, the fact that they're under contract for multiple years, that they're in or before their prime, and that you know there are contenders out there that can use those values. I think it's certainly out there. Now, let's get something straight. No pick in this draft, you know, where the Grizzlies are likely going to pick, is going to be themselves the reason why you move off a Tyus or a Jonas Valanciunas. But there's nothing wrong with also bringing in another talent who you could potentially develop to give you, you know, maybe 70 to 75% of their production at the very least on a cheap contract. And then you now have that plus the ability to trade Tyus or Valanciunas for assets in the future that will likely help you more when you're ready to contend versus what Valanciunas and Tyus offer you now. So I completely 100% agree with you on that thought process. But want to switch it around a little bit as well. Another thing that we've also seen discussed a bit is some of these later second-round picks, even past 40, maybe getting into the undrafted range, kind of like John Concher last year on the two-way contract. There are a couple of names that really stand out. One of them is someone that I just we talk true shooting percentage, effective field goal percentage, and just his accuracy from three, that's Utah State's Sam Merrill. Marcus Howard is another one that stands out. Are
I
there
was
some
hoping you were
going to
say Sam Merrill.
Yeah. Are there some picks in there? I mean, it makes sense to me. If the Grizzlies find a second-round pick for sale and they find a guy that they just absolutely love, there are some names to just at least get into the system, even for a year at South Haven, to see him develop.
Yeah, no, Sam Merrill, I think if you pair him with John Conchar, you may have, like, the most unathletic backcourt who's also pretty good at basketball in NBA history, at least maybe since, like, the 80s or something like that. So I'm a big fan of Sam Merrill. He would make those hustle games must-watch if you add him with Conchar and some of the guys that they have over there. So Merrill is – look, the Grizzlies are already in draft Twitter's darling right now. I think it's them and the Pelicans. They basically every good player that the draft Twitter likes, they end up on one of those two teams seemingly. I'm actually not convinced that Zach Kleiman in a previous life was like a blogger for some SB Nation site and he just happens to now be running a team, because it's kind of scary how he ends up with all the players that draft Twitter likes. But Sam Merrill's a guy that would definitely fit that bill. You know, I think that it's tough because, like, okay, for example, just last season, right, Terrence Davis was a guy that I had ranked in my top 40 that ends up going undrafted and plays a huge role on a really good Raptors team this past season. So it's always hard to project exactly who's going to go undrafted, because if you had looked at me before draft night last night and told me that Terrence Davis was going undrafted, I would have told you there's a better chance he goes in the first round than he goes undrafted. So weird stuff happens, and there's always going to be value with some undrafted guys. I mean, throughout the league's history, there has been value in undrafted guys. And so, I mean, the Grizzlies got one last year in Jontay Porter. Now, he obviously went undrafted because of injury reasons, but that's the type of thing, right? I mean, could Killian Tilly go undrafted? I think it's definitely on the table. You know, you just don't know medically what's going to come up with guys, what's going to come up in guys' background, what different teams like about a guy's skill set that causes him to be drafted or not. There's just so many variables that go into why a team drafts a player and why some players who, you know, seem like obvious picks don't get drafted. So I'm fascinated, man. It all fascinates me. This is like my favorite night every year. So Sam Merrill's a great name. If I had to maybe throw out one more name, it's Jordan Nwawa. I don't know how you say it, from Louisville. I'm really bad with names. I will say that back in the day, Sean, Joe Mullinex and I used to preview the draft for Grizzly Bear Blues, and it was basically just, hey, come check out this podcast where Chip butchers every international player's name the whole time. But Jordan from Louisville is another guy that's got some size, can shoot a little bit, moves decently well. So that's another one that he's a four-year guy at Louisville, a little bit older. Maybe some teams are looking at younger guys in that range that could slip undrafted. And I think a guy that could end up making a roster and making an impact for someone.
If you were to make the half court line a 5-point shot, if you shot behind the half court line, Wara would be a lottery pick because of the range that he has. That guy will shoot it, taking the ball out of bounds to the under end of the court to his basket 94 feet away. That I agree. I had a little bit of question about, you know, how his size projects. I know he's a very good rebounder for his size, but on defense, right, he's become a liability due to his size and things such as that. But with the way he shoots it in that range, you don't question it. You just go with it and see what can happen. Chip, we've spent quite a bit of time together tonight, but every minute of it has been worth it. You, again, as always, show why it's so awesome to catch up with you and get to talk with you. What's going on your end? I agree with you. I'm going to be watching the draft. It's going to be fun to see what's going on. But anything coming up on your end that you're most excited to see as these next few weeks pan out in the NBA?
Well, it's also unprecedented, right? I mean, this is a compacted offseason, and I mean, we've already seen one trade be completed before the moratorium is even lifted, or at least agreed to before the moratorium is lifted, with Dennis Schroeder going to the Lakers. I just, I think Kleiman just can't help himself. I think he's going to do something. It may be a minor something, but I think he's going to do something. He doesn't seem like a guy who likes to just kind of sit back and watch other teams make moves. I think he's smart enough and realizes that he's got to keep improving. And when opportunities arise that improve your team, he's going to take it. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to hold back on that. That's the track record we have, and so that's what I'm assuming is going to carry forward. So he's going to do something, and I'm just. It's such a fascinating time in the NBA with, the collective bargaining agreement stuff being settled at least for a year, free agencies coming up. We set our hard date for when guys can sign max extensions. So, is Giannis going to sign an extension with the Bucks, or is it going to be the summer of Giannis next season? I mean, it's just so much that is going to be compressed in the next, month that. I'm ready. I've got popcorn in the microwave right now. I'm ready to sit back and watch it all happen.
Basically, that is Chip Williams' version of saying, get your popcorn ready for this week. And I do agree with you as well. I think that it may be more of a tinkering move than some type of big significant move. But Chip, I'll end it on this. How awesome is it, though, to finally be, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary for the Grizzlies franchise in Memphis. How nice is it to finally have a front office where you know he's going to do something, but there's just not that feeling of dread like there was with the Wallace era, where you know that it's more likely he's going to screw it up than he's going to hit a home run. And it seems like with Kleiman, there's a lot more effort, creativity, and just natural common sense to make it happen. It's a nice, comforting feeling to have, especially with what he's already got in his cupboard here with the Grizzlies now.
Yeah, I think it is. It definitely is. And, I think it's okay to say that we certainly appreciate what Chris Wallace did. And, the grit and grind era probably does not happen if he doesn't, bring Tony Allen over and make the trade for Zach Randolph. And so, he obviously was not able to make the moves to get them over the hump. But now you've got this young guy, law school guy from Duke who seems sharp and really trusts the analytics side. And we've got Tayshaun Prince there who he can kind of lean on. Tayshaun's obviously extremely respected guy around the league. So between the two of them, I'm not obviously privy to how everything works in that front office. But if you tell me you have Zach Kleiman and you've got Tayshaun Prince, it's a comforting feeling knowing that those two are two extremely sharp guys who have proven now over the past year that they know what they're doing. They have a plan. And I think for the first time in a few years, at least, the Grizzlies are a very attractive team. And they are in a good spot to continue to upgrade this team over the next couple of years. And it's I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this develop over the next few seasons.
100% agree. Chip, you again, I always forget the end of the Twitter handle, but it's at Chip Williams Jr. Is that right, or is it just Chip Williams? Yeah.
No, it's Chip Williams Jr. Somebody beat me to Chip Williams, so I had to throw the Jr. at the end.
There we go.
Chip it was not Williams my father Jr. either. So
the great thing about Chip is that I know that like we mentioned up front, he's had a very busy 2020. But if you want some great perspectives on a lot of different sports takes, Chip is a wonderful follow to have and a very good friend of the show. Chip, if you wouldn't mind just staying on with us for a second afterwards, but can't thank you enough and hope that you enjoy this week, as I know all of our listeners and myself will.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Not a problem at all. For Chip Williams, my name is Sean Coleman. Don't forget, you can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSEC. You can also find the podcast wherever podcasts are available, Spotify, Stitcher, the podcast app on your phone. We're going to keep you updated all week long whenever something happens or with what we may expect to happen. We'll make sure that we keep you informed here on Locked On Grizzlies. Until next time, have a great start to your week, and we'll talk to you soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.